I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
To the Waxman's reaction show. There are lots of us right now stood at the bar in the Harbour View.
We all turn up for the good results.
I asked you if you wanted to host this, Steve. I'm very loud.
Have you ever turned out like this for one of your action shows?
Yeah. And you know what?
Who are you?
Much more well behaved than this. I'm Matthew, actually. We're in the Harbour View. We're watching Maidenhead versus Wrexham. But the main takeaway from it is that Sunderland have lost 5-1 at home to Alex Neil's very bold Stoke City FC. I'm not going to say anything else on the matter now, so I'm going to hand you all over to Stephen Goldsmith.
No, don't give us that. Don't be like that, Matthew. Don't be like that.
I'll be like what I want.
Shall we get the referee bash out of the way first?
Well, that's a pleasant result.
Let's be honest, like, we've just been dicked 5-1.
Yeah.
And we were absolutely shite for all five of their goals.
Yeah.
So let's just get the referee bashing out of the way first.
Well, the referee was abysmal.
He was, and the thing is,
Eleanor McKay.
Hello, Matthew Keeling. We are allowed to say the referee was shit and also say we were shit.
Agree.
Like, the referee was fucking awful. I think he went and did like a 15-minute online course how to be a referee at half time, because the first half, I genuinely think he managed to be the most hated bald man in that stadium.
And I'm there.
And Stephen was there. And Alex Neil was all there. And
wait, we got the Alex Neil bit.
But genuinely, he was just fucking awful.
He looked like Matt Hancock.
He did. My dad said this actually, Stephen.
Oh, well, I've got the dar cracks, you know.
Rick had it last
week. You're a dar,
so
to be fair.
Right.
Well, I am a dar. There's no doubt in that.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Cheers, Oliver.
Thanks for listening.
But the issue was that at times he was stumbling around, he looked lost. At one point, a foul happened, he didn't see it. He turned to the lino and the lino nodded his head and then he gave the foul. Like,
Rebecca agrees.
Yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah. I missed the first goal, so I can't comment on that.
I missed most of them.
Who wants to articulate our listeners through the referee and
I think the best man for that is Michael.
So just because people
people
listen to this might not watch much. Michael, talk us through the referee's actions for the first goal.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate this. So basically, the referee, as Eleanor's already pointed out, didn't understand the basic rules of football. In the when there's a collision like that and the player goes down, fair enough, you've got to stop the game because it's a head injury. But we had possession of the ball and he just decides to completely disregard that very basic law and allow them to just go up the other end of the field and score. And then from then, we just completely capitulated. So I think the referee was absolutely abysmal throughout the game. And in that moment, he was absolutely appalling because, as I say, he just failed to identify a basic law. But we lost our heads and we lost the first goal because we lost our heads and we were like charging around trying to win the ball back immediately. Our shape, even though we hadn't passed the ball well, had been okay, I think, up until that point. But then we just completely lost it and allowed them to take the lead, and then we just never recovered from that point for me.
What? Sorry, I wasn't listening. I agree with me.
Yeah. I agree with Mick, because I think that this is very much on a trend of, if you watch the Rotherham game, if you watch the Coventry game, this was coming. Maybe not this extreme, but
quite bad, really.
Yeah, it's not great, but we've looked shit in those two matches. Yeah. and then we've looked shit again. I hope the week without a midweek game would give us a rest, and it just hasn't. The depth and the lack of depth in our squad is really showing through now, and that's what came into it today.
I agree. Hi, Richard.
Hello. There, like everything that went wrong today, everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. Like, referee was terrible. Team selection was awful.
It rained.
It rained. Yeah.
But you weren't in row three, though.
I wasn't in... Yeah, well, we were just saying, I'm glad we weren't, because we would have been... Like, you know, it's... Again, with the fans throwing stuff on at the pitch, and our home fans as well, just like...
I would like to say that I did not tell people to throw tomatoes onto the pitch on the previous show. I asked people to refrain from throwing specifically tomatoes. I didn't say anything about throwing Lucozade bottles, to be fair. So, I did my bit. That's all I care about.
It was just like a perfect storm of everything going wrong all at the same time, and it just conspired, and it was like, at the same time, there's a lot of chickens coming home to roost today, like, in terms of how short we are in that squad. And even though they won 5-1, we made them look like world beaters. Yeah. Even though they had some good talent players, that Smallbone in the middle,
Stephen Ireland?
No, the bald one.
Stephen Ireland.
Is that what? No,
that was Will Smallbone, but that's it.
Oh, you convinced me by saying it.
Look nothing like him.
he was bald.
He was great. Like,
he was good.
Yeah. He looked a bit like Voldemort. And I didn't think that the booing at the end would be for anyone but Alex Neil, but it was... I don't think it was
only for everyone, but I think it was there at the end.
I think the day kind of summed up the problem we've kind of had as a fan base for a while, because it seems to me that when Neil left and he cited the recruitment as being a bit of an issue of why he left, it's become very much of a camp of either your team Alex Neil or your team Speakman, and there's been very little room for nuance about it. So I think the day a lot of people got very angry and kind of like, and they start to turn on the players when, yes, I know the players have got to stand up and be counted, but large parts of it aren't their fault, because I think a lot of players have been asked to perform roles they're not quite capable of doing. So, for example, having Dan Neil as your sole holding midfielder playing the Corey Evans role is not sustainable over a long period of time. So it's as if people have to turn around and back the recruitment team to be helped regardless of anything, because any acknowledgement is kind of backing Alex Neil. Does that make sense? No, I agree.
I think that's a really good point. I think, personally, it's absolutely fine to say that, you know, Speakman and his bunch of merry men have done a good job in bringing in, you know, highly talented footballers that are clearly going to have brilliant careers, whether with us or with somebody else. It's also fine to say that they've not done a very good job in addressing the areas where we're so desperately sure. Yeah, we're so obviously sure.
And even Tony Mowbray, who generally tours the party line on this, has said previously, even before Corey Evans got injured, said, you know, something along the lines of, I know I don't have anything to do with transfers, but if they listen to my advice, they'll get somebody who can do what Corey Evans does. And they didn't, even after he was injured. They didn't. The centre-forward thing doesn't even need explaining, because you would have to be an absolute moron not to notice that that needs addressing.
Well, unfortunately, Stephen, there are several thousand people,
morons in the world.
Well...
It's like a because they've backed themselves into the corner of, if I criticise the recruitment model, then I'm in favour of Alex Neil.
That's that is true, because I don't, like I said, that I'm very often wrong and I'm very rarely right. But at the end of January, I said that not signing a striker was a disgrace. And it is. It's completely unfathomable that they would not do that. And you watch that game today and you go, well, we've got Gellert. And I'm sorry, if Leeds knew that this was the way that Gellert was going to be playing for us, they would not have loaned him. They would have loaned him to Wigan. He would have got literally, they would have loaned him to anybody but Sunderland at this point. Because it's a farce, that.
And I feel sorry for him a bit.
Well, because I do, but he's also shit as well.
He's not number nine, is he?
No, he's obviously number nine.
He's not number nine.
Yeah, he's a waste of time.
He's come in and then suddenly, like, all eyes are on him. You're number nine. Like, and he's not.
He's actually number 28, I think.
He may not be a number nine, but if he doesn't have a first touch, he's not going to last.
His first touch, honestly, the worst I've ever seen.
Well, apart from Daniel.
Well, compared to Luke O'Neill, the best, obviously, that we were told last season.
I've made my mind up on.
You know, like, I can't believe it's coming to this. like after with our
original pirate,
our reputation. I like it. With our reputation of what we've said about like Logo 9 in the past and stuff, but did anybody, when they heard the substitutions at half time, think that Logo 9 wasn't going to play in the centre in midfield?
Well, no. I was downstairs. I missed their first goal.
Of course.
And me and Amber were downstairs, and I heard Logo 9's name come out, and I presumed he'd come on for Dan Neil.
Yeah. Like, I was like, everyone in the stadium.
And I came in. Oh no, he's at left. What?
Yeah.
Tony Mowbray, unfortunately, oh no, I can't.
Like, I just, obviously, you know, we beat a record saying we don't think he's a centre midfielder, but it says a lot about the situation of our midfield at the minute. The last three games, we've been calling out for him to play centre midfield so much because he's the only person who can deal with.
We've been calling for him not to play centre midfield for 4 years, yeah. And he's been playing there.
Yeah.
Now, can you just put him
there?
Now we want him there. So actually, what this is the club just winding us up and trolling us.
I mean, you know what? If they are
4 years,
if the wise men
see a lot, don't want him playing there. We'll play him.
We'll pick.
Actually, can you play him there?
No.
We'll pick him up in your carriage.
Yeah.
It's just, I think what's happened at the minute is a general trend of like players who, yes, had a CV and they need to take responsibility as well to a certain degree, but players who are being allocated roles that they're not quite capable of doing. So you look throughout the team and the problem is it's going through the spine of the team, so we don't have a proper target man. I actually think Gellert might look okay playing off like a centre forward
with Ellis Sims or Ross Stewart, but he's
absolutely not a target man. And then we've got a situation where we absolutely need Corey Evans. So like Dan, the disappointing thing for me is we don't learn. So last season Dan Neil was dropped by Alex Neil for a long period of time because he was suffering from burnout. What we're doing now is we're not only saying to Dan Neil, you've got to play every week, but we're saying you've got to play an unfamiliar holding midfield role, which is not what you're good at doing.
He's essentially playing the captain's role, Dan Neil.
He completely is. He's like the captain of our centre midfield almost.
The issue with Dan Neil as well is that goal where he was left as the last man back today that we conceded. I reckon that's probably the fifth time we have conceded that exact same goal from Dan Neil being the last man back. And it took it happening today for them to go, oh no, wait, next time we're just going to leave Roberts and Michu as the last men back instead. I mean, and that's the change they made. How has nobody seen that happen once, maybe twice, and then gone, right, Dan Neil isn't going to be our last man back, or we're going to work with him so that he doesn't concede the same fucking goal over and over again?
Right.
How has no one picked up on that?
For the match with suitable casual clobber. From overshirts and jackets to polos and tees, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats and more. Fritterskalada is making waves in the pubs and on the terraces. Come join the FDR movement and get 15% off with your discount code WMS. Stand out in the crowd, be indie, search FDR clothing online and on socials.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I think also as well, like, so we've just been going in on speaking a bit there and what we're being left short with, which is right and it's fair. And I think what's becoming clear now is how well Tony Mowbray has done with this group of players.
Yes.
But I will also say today, considering what Eleanor was just saying there, that Daniel last season wasn't even considered somebody who could sit in midfield. Today he was the only centre midfielder we had really who could do that job. This was very much like, you know, when you speak to somebody and you're like, all right, mate. Where they're like, what would the team our player would be? And they just list all of the attacking midfielders. And you think, well, that doesn't work. Yeah. And it felt like that was the team he put out today. And how they didn't score more in the first half, I don't know. Because Daniel was by himself the whole game. And they were slicing through us, like, time and time and time again. Unsurprisingly, really.
Well, yeah.
It was like Alex Pritchard. You're going to play Alex Pritchard instead of midfield, like, in a sitting role.
Yeah. Neil was on yellow as well, so...
Yeah, well, yeah.
Not much... With Pritchard, I was surprised how far forward he was, even when... Before the change of shape at half-time. I was surprised how far forward he was not dropping in. Because there was obviously Akers in front of the back four. And we're just... We just hung them out to dry, really. And it was the same against Coventry as well. There was huge gaps between defence and midfield there as well.
Sorry, Richard.
No, that's fine. Just annoyed.
No, sorry, mate. I've cut across you there. I think what really sums up the general situation we have is that at half-time, in my opinion, the game was crying out for a PR Ekwa kind of player. Because he's physically imposing, he's really good, he's come with a reputation of being really good on the ball, to kind of calm things down, keep possession, but he's also over 6 foot, he's got some physicality about him. So one of two things are true. Either Tony Mowbray is kind of like incompetent and hasn't made that substitution, or the alternative is he doesn't deem Ekwa to be ready to play first team football in the Championship. So evil.
It's that one. Isn't it?
It's almost, I don't want to go so far as to say like negligent, but when we have an option like that and he's not ready to play first team football, what is the point in bringing him in as a key player? He should have been brought in to supplement another centre midfielder like Mowbray suggested, as Stephen pointed out.
That's what we're not going to do that, because you're going to, anyone we ever sign now is going to be 8 years old. And who previously, in order to sign for Sunderland now, you have to be 8 years old and you have to have previously been for Bastia.
Yes, and apparently you have to wear jeans. Isn't that a thing that when you sign, you have to wear jeans?
Well, anyway, that's some loser. Oh, no, I'm not going to go there.
But the issue is that, and I said this to you like before we started recording, Alex Neil is still on the sidelines today going, they didn't back me in transfers. And I left for more money, but also because they wouldn't back me in my transfers. They've been left short because they haven't actually looked what they need in terms of transfers, and we've come and destroyed them 5-1.
The worst bit for me is really their shit. Stoke are rubbish.
They're like world champions today. Like, it's just incredible. It was like they were chanting like, he left because you were shit. Like, they've been in, like, they were 17th before the kickoff.
They hate him. And this is it. Like, and we're going in on everything now, from like recruitment, from top to bottom, and all that stuff. And had Sunderland scored first today, we would have won, I think, because they weren't that good. And we know what football's like, you know. And when we were on top, I think had we scored, we probably would have won. And then it all collapsed. And we haven't seen
did it collapse.
We haven't seen a collapse like that in a long time.
Well, not since
Whoa. First time all season we've lost by a great margin than two. It's first time since the Coventry game in the first season back in League One that we've conceded 5 at home. It's probably our heaviest home defeat in a long, long time. And the last heaviest home defeat.
And it's just reeling from the legal implications.
Just really chasing it, and it's like we've got to go.
I think
we've got to rebuild from this now. And
but where does it begin? Because it's a tough game next week at Norwich.
Yeah,
I'd say rebuild.
When I said last week, I don't know where our next point's going to come from. I was saying it maybe on the pessimistic side. I seriously don't know where the next point's going to come from.
And the thing The thing is, Stephen is right when he says we are going in on everything, and we are kind of like going in on all the players and recruitment and everything from top to bottom. But games like today are what give us kind of the scope to do that, because games like today show us that actually everything that happens at a football club does impact the results on the field. And it's not just today, it's how we played at Coventry, it's how we played at Rotherham, it's how we've played in the last three games, where we've taken 1 point from nine. Is that correct? Like,
one from 12.
No, zero from nine.
12.
Zero from nine.
Zero from nine, yeah. One from 12. Yeah. Brilliant. And like that is just showing that there is obviously something fundamentally wrong. And it might be that we are going in on everything, but one of those things, or a mixture of those things, has to be the cause.
Hey, look, you're gonna go through bad runs in the season.
Yeah.
Like you are going to, and you just gotta hope that. Look. This is probably the most, like, we're going to probably get pelters for. No, I'm not.
Why I'm gutted, right? Well, I'm about this. Obviously, getting beat 5-1 is horrible. But why I'm so gutted is because, as we pointed out, Mowbray has done so well with this group of players. And what I don't want is people to start turning on the manager in this group of players.
I don't think they will.
Because I don't think they deserve it.
But
I think people now, because there's no new ones to put themselves in the camp of, if you don't accept the playership, then you've got to question the recruitment. I think some people just aren't prepared to do that.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think, personally, you know, as I've just said, you're going to go through points in the season where, look, stuff is shit.
I'm glad you wrote that article, mate.
And things go, yeah, I know, well, yeah. Things go wrong. And that's largely fine. What you've got to do now is make sure this doesn't become like a rut. You've got to, it's a tough game next week at Norwich, but then you've got Luton at home the week after. It's like, if you then lose them two games, then it's like, right, well, if you go on and pick something up at Norwich, thanks, mate. If you go and pick something up at Norwich and then you beat Luton, it's a blip and it's fine. Losing 5-1 at home to Stoke is completely unacceptable. But all we can do now is to make sure that, right, well, this doesn't happen again. Whereas, like, we lost 5-1 to Everton under Peter Reid on Boxing Day and then didn't win again until April.
It was 5-0. I was there.
All right, mate. Fucking hell, I'm not 60.
Looking at Sun like yeah.
I'm not no, fucking no. 62, no, so
I
can't.
No,
but seriously.
I think it's hard because obviously you're an inexperienced squad.
Yeah.
And it's the sort of thing where a 5-1 could completely write off the season.
Yeah.
But you go and get a 2-0 win against Norwich again, and it completely flips it around again because they are young and it's exciting to watch. But it's also hard for them to take as well because they've never been there before.
And we've said that we're going to lose game. Not quite like this. Like, if we're going to lose 5-1, you're expecting it to be at Burnley or something, aren't you? You're not expecting to lose 5-1 at home to a ball.
It just feels like self-harm. Like, at the start of the season...
I agree, actually, yeah.
At the start of the season, like, because the easy thing now is for people to turn and say, oh, what did they expect the first season back at the Championship?
This is what's going to happen.
And we know that, don't we? And, like, we're not stupid. We know we would have been happy with us finishing 10th. This season,
17th, really.
We'd have been happy with it, really. But the difference is, we're not stupid. And when you're watching games week in, week out, and then you decide it's we've self-harmed ourselves in a way where we thought, well, actually, we're not going to do what everybody knows we need to do, and then we start suffering the consequences of that. Suddenly, you can't then call us revisionists for doing that. We're just reacting.
Like my problem with the whole situation is that you can't pick and choose when promotion happens.
Exactly. Yes.
And we should know all too well.
Us
more than anyone should know all too well that you can't guarantee promotion.
No.
And for me, it's not a given that you finished 10th this season. Oh well, next season we'll get in the playoffs. It doesn't work like that. Huddersfield last season were in the playoff final, right? And I know circumstances, but there's nothing to say that them circumstances don't happen to us.
We got in the playoffs a couple of years ago.
There's nothing to say that them circumstances don't happen to us. We've got a lot of loan players, we've got a lot of in-demand players. If this squad falls apart, all of a sudden, you have to rebuild it in the summer. And it's like, it's not a given that you're going to be better next season. You can't. It's all very well going, and I agree to a large extent that it's like, yeah, great. Finishing 10th is a success, and it is. And if someone had said to me at the beginning of the season, look, you're going to finish 10th, you'd be like, fucking hell, great, like, absolutely fantastic. But from where we were, it's almost as if they've gone, oh, fucking hell, we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, mate, you just pretty much said what I was going to say, so well done. Agree with you.
Cheers, Oliver.
Oh, well, we'll wrap it up then.
Yeah.
All right, well.
place to end it, really.
Agree, actually. Thanks to everyone in the pub who's contributed.
Rick got that bored. There was that many of us involved. He's walked off.
He's sulked off.
Oh, he's coming back.
Just saying goodbye.
All right, yeah, see you later.
He's back in row three now.
I was just saying hello.
Cheers, Oliver.
Cheers, Oliver.
Are you back on Monday?
We'll be back on Monday to go over this even more, yes.
Oh, great. Well, I'll definitely be listening to that. And I will be listening.
No, but seriously, numbers go when we lose like this.
No, but seriously, contractually, we
have to listen to it. Yeah, we are contractually obliged to listen to the Monday podcast. No, but seriously, it's a good listen. Get yourself on.
Be good, lad.
Get on that. Get yourself on that Spotify and get it listening.
It's a canny turn, like.
Aye, Stephen's a canny turn, like. Thanks for listening.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.